As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
It's Straight Outta Cobham, a show about Chelsea FC from The Athletic, coming up. Misery in Manchester. We'll preview the trip to Goodison Park. There's a huge game for the women's team and plenty more. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic. This is Straight Outta Cobham. Here's G on X, formerly known as Twitter, saying, can somebody actually tell us what the plan is? There's supposed to be one, but all the evidence points to there not being one at all, since we've only regressed since the plan began. Well, I'm afraid the plan today is for one of those pods. It might be a little bit miserable, not when we talk about the women's team, but certainly when we dissect what happened at Old Trafford on Wednesday. Here to do that with me are two of the Athletic's very best. Hello, Luke Bosher.
Hello, Matt. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm a little bit tired, but, you know, I'm hanging in there, just like Chelsea. Liam Toomey's back with us too. Liam, you were furiously tweeting on Wednesday night. Has your anger subsided at all in the few hours in between?
I wouldn't call it anger. I'd call it alarm. But I think, you know, this conversation is going to be so bleak that I'm actually looking forward to losing the quiz.
That's to come later. Not necessarily a defeat, but we'll see. We have to talk about a defeat first, though.
Reguilón, Garnacho, in towards the back post, where you know who. Currently, Manchester United's most reliable goal scorer, Scott McTominay. Whistle imminent. Reece James. Before Caicedo can touch it, the referee concludes the evening's entertainment.
We created many chances enough to try to be on the game. We draw. We started the second half well, but then we concede. We miss this freshness and be clinical, because we created some chances that maybe should score. We were maybe now talking about the different way, but overall, I think we didn't deserve to win and they were better than us.
Can 2-1 be a thrashing? It certainly felt that way at Old Trafford as Chelsea slipped to a defeat that ought to have been much more emphatic, as Scott McTominay was made to look like peak Frank Lampard and Chelsea were outplayed by Manchester United. This Manchester United. Here's Simon on the full-time whistle.
Slow start going to games. I can't remember. When was the last time I saw Chelsea win? I can't remember. It's been a while. Yeah, Manchester United 2, Chelsea 1. The 10-year wait continues. Well, now it's then to 11th year for Chelsea to win at Old Trafford against this rather average Manchester United side, which Chelsea once again made them look a lot better than they actually are. This was another alarming away performance. I'm trying to think if it was worse than Newcastle. I suppose they created a fair amount of chances themselves, but really United could have had a hatful. It reminded me of when I was here only 7 months ago under interim Frank Lampard, his penultimate game in charge. It was a similar game where Chelsea look there for the taking. Very open, porous, chance after chance. A lot of the time from mistakes of their own making, giving the ball away from their own penalty area and just total lack of organisation. Yeah, it's as I've been saying in the pod on a regular basis, that you know, it's one step forward, one step back. We don't know which Chelsea are going to turn up. And it's hard to see when a consistent, long, unbeaten run, which is what they need to go on to remotely threaten qualification for the Conference League, let alone the Champions League, which is looking like a pipe dream right now. I just can't see them being able to put that kind of run of games together. The players to go over to the away end, just at the final whistle. I did hear boos. I don't know whether that was aimed at the players or whether it was about something else. So I don't want to give the Chelsea fans a service, but I wouldn't surprise me if they were booed, because this isn't good enough to merge from one win to a defeat to a draw, one win, a draw, a defeat. It doesn't feel like Chelsea are progressing. And yes, injuries mean that Chelsea don't have a consistent selection, but at the same time, they have enough preparation time during the week to look a lot more cohesive than this. And it still feels like at times they make up as they go along. And with the money that Chelsea spent, we expect a bit more than that.
Simon mentioned boos. I was right next to the away section and there certainly were some. Can't really blame them. Jonathan tweeted us to say, I was at the game. I don't think Chelsea were. Frustrating, boring, poor defensively, poor in attack. Even the fans seem to have given up hope and resigned to defeat in the second half as I saw people leaving. That's a pretty good summary, isn't it, Liam? It's two steps forward, two steps back at the moment. This was Newcastle, but worse?
Yeah, I think it was worse. And people who followed my tweets, I'm still calling them tweets, Elon, will probably have guessed that last night was a tipping point for me, in that I think until this game, I thought there was a chance that this Chelsea team could go on some sort of a run, some degree of a run, and get themselves back into the top four, top five picture, because I felt that we'd seen enough flashes, if not entire performances, in previous games in recent weeks to suggest that that was coming and it was just a matter of time. I no longer think that to be the case. And it's partly because of what we saw on the pitch, which was, as I said, worse than Newcastle. I think at least with Newcastle, they were in the game for 45 minutes. I don't think they really competed at all at Old Trafford. And partly because of what Pochettino said afterwards. And I'm only slightly paraphrasing him here, but he said one phrase that was really alarming, I think. I think it should be really alarming to any Chelsea fan, which was, we need to recover players to be competitive. And if that's true, I understand them, you know, there might have been some fatigue in the legs having played with 10 men for 45 minutes. We can probably say this was the game they paid the higher price for Conor Gallagher's red card than Brighton.
That's what Pochettino said to me when I spoke to him afterwards. And yeah, there's something in that, isn't there? Maybe not quite as much as he was making of it.
Well, I think it was probably a double penalty, because the players, he only made one change, I believe, from the team that started against Brighton. So those players probably had a bit extra in their legs than you would have thought. And yes, there was one day less than United had to prepare for this. But also, I think they really missed Gallagher on the pitch. His energy, his ability to find space to receive the ball and move it up the pitch, that Chelsea just could not play out through United's press at all. And it wasn't because United were good, because you saw the moment Chelsea put two passes together, they carved United open like a cake. United were still, I think, pretty pants, but they were made to look competent by the way Chelsea played. But the alarming thing, I think, is if Pochettino is sincere about that, about Chelsea needing to recover players to be competitive, and it's not just an excuse, and I have no reason to think it's just an excuse. Oh man, the rest of this month could look pretty ugly, because if these players are now overloaded. We know Pochettino hasn't rotated much. He's reached a point where the pool of fit players that he trusts to play in the Premier League is very small. It's about 12 or 13 guys. I think we saw all of them last night, other than Badiashile. There are six games between now and New Year's Day. And if Preston with Energy wasn't on the first page of the scouting report when you play Chelsea before, it certainly is now. What do you think Everton are going to do at Goodison Park? I mean, they don't need a second invitation to get into Chelsea and rough them up usually, but having seen what they saw against United, I think they'll be licking their lips. And you look at the injured players, you know, okay, some of them might be a bit closer to coming back, and Nkunku, Lavia, they're going to need to be eased back in, and they're not going to fix all of this. They might make an impact, but they're not going to fix all of this. So if these players are lacking in intensity now, which two of the last three games have told us they are, this could be a really rough period for Chelsea. And this is the period of the season where they need to be closing that gap to the top four or five. And at the moment, you'd probably bet on that gap getting bigger, not smaller.
Look, in terms of the lineup for this game, did it surprise you, the shift in formation, the fact that Cucurella was at right back? Is this the last time we'll see Caicedo and Fernandez just playing as a two in there? Because it didn't work, did it, when some Chelsea supporters have been crying out for that all season, it seems.
No, as Liam said, I do think Pochettino only has a select few Chelsea players that he, you know, A, trusts, and B, has fit available to him. I was surprised to see Cucurella line up as a right back. I think we all kind of thought, looking at the lineup, that Disasi would play in the right back role that he occupied against Brighton, and Cucurella would play in his more natural left back role with Colwell and Silva. But I guess Pochettino wanted to revert back to the Silva-Disasi partnership that had served Chelsea fairly well in the opening part of the season. And then further up the pitch, you know, injuries have decimated Chelsea this season, as we've talked about a lot, and, you know, very few options really, especially with Conor Gallagher out suspended as to who could play where. And I thought, you know, I'm absolutely not coming for him at all, but although he scored a great goal, I thought that Cole Palmer in midfield was certainly a failed experiment. You know, that was an area where Chelsea really, really struggled, and he didn't look natural there, certainly with the defensive side of the game. But obviously going forward, he still had his usual poise and technique. But overall, it was a very bleak performance from a Chelsea perspective. And I don't think anyone in that starting 11 or the substitutes can come away from it, you know, pleased with their contribution. And that's kind of been the story of Chelsea's season so far. It's been very, I think I'd honestly say that, not just because I watch more of them than any other club, but I think Chelsea are probably the hardest side to analyse so far this Premier League season, just because the lack of consistency from week to week is absolutely remarkable. You really don't know what you're going to get from Chelsea. And that is a big problem for Pochettino and the players.
Won't someone think of the Chelsea Correspondents League? That's what I want to say. Thank you for your sympathy. It's much appreciated.
Yeah, Simon's post-match piece is kind of on that theme. What progress is actually being made at Chelsea right now? Head to The Athletic to read that. athletic.com/ChelseaPod. The place to go to sign up if you're not currently a subscriber. Lucy put the call out for tweets. We had absolutely loads of them. We'll get through a couple. Neil says the vast majority of the outfield players should hang their heads. A dreadful performance across the pitch. Most worryingly, Caicedo, who's barely played a decent game. Is it his position or is he a one-season wonder? Ross says maybe the defence sitting on the edge of the box while they try and press from the front, leaving the rest of the pitch covered by Enzo/Caicedo. It's why they don't look like £220 million worth of footballers. And what was your take on that particular area of the field, Liam? Because they were totally overrun, weren't they, those two? And we're talking about Scott McTominay here, not, you know, the greatest midfielder in the world.
Yeah, I think we mentioned the absence of Gallagher. I think people who doubt him might now appreciate what he brings to that trio. He does a lot of running that the other two can't. And in particular, I think Enzo Fernandez has gone backwards in the last few weeks. I know he scored twice against Brighton. I think that was one of his better performances, but he looks quite fatigued to me. I mean, he's not the most athletically gifted midfielder in terms of his speed and his mobility around the pitch, but he's better in that regard than Jorginho, or at least he was when he arrived. And right now he looks like he's moving through treacle. And I find it hard to believe that isn't connected to the fact that he's basically played every game for close to 2 years from his last 6 months in South America, basically. So that I think is a bit of a problem, because it puts even more on Caicedo, particularly when Gallagher isn't there, to just cover an area of the pitch it isn't possible to cover. And when you've got the players in front of them not really stopping anything getting through for them to deal with, and not really retaining the ball either when Chelsea are trying to play out. You know, Sterling's usually good at that. He had a bad night at Old Trafford for that, I think. It's been a consistent problem for Mudryk and Jackson to keep the ball when it's played up to them and move Chelsea up the pitch. And Cole Palmer, I think, aside from his goal, had one of his worst performances for Chelsea. So, yeah, I think when you talk about the midfield, you can't just talk about the midfield, because I think it's also the structure around them was malfunctioning. But yeah, they certainly didn't look like a quarter of a billion pound central midfield pairing at Old Trafford.
Well, the man who paired them is Maurizio Pochettino. Lots of people getting in touch to talk about him. Vit wins the award for the most uses of the word coach in a tweet. He says, is it even a coach problem? It starts to look to me as if it's not a coach problem, because I don't know why, but there were too many coaches for it just to be coaches. I know they'll not compete for the title, but I hope they'd compete in games. Elliot says, is our current form more a result of bad coaching or bad recruitment? I hear Poch should be doing this and that, but then we didn't finish signing players until the season had already started. If Poch goes, I think the directors of football should go too. And Jamice adds, seeing a lot of comments here about Poch, whilst I don't think he's blameless, this has been a pretty poor hand to play with. Interested in the pod's thoughts on this process that we're supposedly going through. Luke, there's always going to be pressure on managers at Chelsea when they don't win games, but Maurizio Pochettino, he didn't have his best night by any means at Old Trafford, but there are things that have been working against him this season, would you say, or are you more critical of what he's done in recent weeks?
I think there have been some decisions that can be questioned from Pochettino just from time to time. But I think, you know, looking at this game, you know, again, to kind of talk about the midfield, you know, if Moises Caicedo or Enzo Fernandez got, you know, an injury in the warm-up or the first 10 minutes, you know, what is Pochettino supposed to do then? Does he bring on Leo Castledine for his senior debut? Does he bring on Reece James in midfield? You know, that's where we're at with this Chelsea squad at the moment. And, you know, his most bizarre, quote unquote, tactical decision, well, you know, selection decision from last night was probably Cucurella playing at right back. But Cucurella, you know, was by no means Chelsea's worst player. You know, it wasn't like he was at fault for both of the goals or anything. So from a selection standpoint, I think he is being quite hamstrung by the injuries that we've talked about. And there's only, you know, again, to another extent, there's only so many times you can use injuries as a kind of excuse, because, you know, I'm struggling to kind of to piece it together myself. I understand Chelsea fans' frustration, and it's something that, you know, I want more from Pochettino, but I understand that it is an absolutely awful hand. And I think, you know, one thing that Chelsea are lacking that isn't talked about that much is leaders in the final third, players that, you know, are going to take control of the game further up the pitch. I think it's great having Thiago Silva and Reece James and Ben Chilwell, you know, experienced players who can wear the armband and talk to those around them. But I think when you look further up the pitch, it's only Raheem Sterling that has, you know, any kind of significant Premier League experience. And if he has a poor game, you know, as he did at Old Trafford and he has done from time to time this season, Nicholas Jackson, Mudryk, Palmer, these aren't players that know necessarily, okay, when do I need to slow the game down? You know, when do I need to increase the tempo? When do I need to just check and, you know, string a few passes together? We don't have that. And I think that showed in, you know, Chelsea gave the ball away so many times in frustrating positions last night, both in the final third and defensive third. And a lot of the time it was the offensive players. I think, you know, in the build up to Scott McTominay's first goal, Cole Palmer and Nicholas Jackson both gave the ball away in Chelsea's defensive third, which I think is a real issue. And not that Pochettino can't legislate for that, but I understand that that's that's very difficult to kind of coach.
I don't agree with people who question what's the plan on the pitch, because I think Pochettino's system has been pretty consistent since the start of the season, and it's pretty clear when you watch them what they're trying to do. Even last night, you know, they're trying to do the same things they've done all season, which is play the ball out from the back, trust their midfielders and forward players to receive the ball under pressure and play through and around pressure to basically expose teams and create almost, you know, transition situations, bait the press and then spring forward. That's what they've been trying to do since day one. The problem with what we saw at Old Trafford was that it fell apart regularly on the first or second pass, because, and it wasn't because United were, I mean, they were pressing with energy, which is the minimum you would expect from a team in their situation, but they weren't doing anything, you know, revolutionary or unexpected or particularly extraordinary. A lot of the time, Chelsea players were just passing the ball to them. The errors weren't particularly forced. And so, yeah, I don't agree with the lack of plan, but the dangerous thing for Pochettino, I think, is that after the game last night, with the way he was talking and just his general demeanour, I thought, obviously, Simon will have a better handle on this than us because he was at the game and in the press conference, but he struck a tone of feeling helpless to me for the first time this season with what he was saying and the way he was saying it, just kind of pointing at the sky, all the injuries, and just saying, you know, this is the reality. Basically, he didn't say the words, but the subtext was, what can I do? And while there may be some, you know, significant mitigation for what we're seeing from Chelsea right now, and injuries is part of that, helplessness is not a tone you want to strike regularly as a coach, particularly as a coach of a club like Chelsea, because it doesn't, history tells us it doesn't help you in the long run.
Well, the good thing about December is that there's always another game just around the corner. Oh, God, it's away at Everton. We'll look ahead to that one next.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Well, Everton play tonight as we record at home to Newcastle. Chelsea actually won at Goodison on the opening day of last season. Doesn't that feel like a lifetime ago? They had lost on their previous four visits to Goodison, though. Luke, I think I can say with some confidence that Conor Gallagher might come straight back into the team after suspension. You putting Reece James back in there as well? What other changes are we seeing here?
Yeah, I think Conor Gallagher is the only player to have emerged from the trip to Old Trafford with any credit or increased stock, which says a lot, considering he wasn't allowed to play. I think Reece James will come back in. I'd be surprised if he didn't. He had those kind of two headers, I think, during the second half. Once where he tried to head it back to Robert Sanchez and accidentally played in, I think it was Garnacho, but then had a superb recovery to kind of get back and block Garnacho from getting a shot off, which kind of showed the yin and the yang of Reece James. And then he had another header where he kind of headed it infield from a right back position and caused Chelsea a bit of bother. But I think, you know, the main thing that, you know, sort of excited me watching Reece James was he had three or four crosses from, you know, various positions on the right hand side that were absolutely delicious. And really, at least one of them should have, correct me if I'm wrong, I think none of them resulted in a shot on goal, which says a lot about Chelsea's attacking proficiency. And, looking at them and looking at the position that I think Nicholas Jackson was close to one, Enzo Fernandez had that one where he tried a flick that I think enraged quite a lot of Chelsea fans on X, formerly known as Twitter. And Yeah, the fact that neither of them resulted in a shot or a goal is remarkable. So, yeah, it's a long-winded way of saying I think Reece James's position at Goodison is fairly assured.
It's interesting, wasn't it, Liam, that Levi Colwill wore the armband at Old Trafford for the first half and not Thiago Silva. You sort of think if you're backing Thiago Silva to still play every game, and I think I'm right in saying he started every game in the Premier League this season, why would he not be the captain over somebody who's playing for Chelsea for the first time this season?
Well, I think it's a continuation of what Pochettino's done so far, which is he's already said publicly, I think, that Thiago Silva doesn't need the armband to be a leader on the pitch. And it's clear that with who he gives the armband to, he's trying to develop new leaders in this very young squad. And that has generally manifested in just, is there a Cobham graduate around? Give it to them. Either James or Gallagher and now Colwill. I think I remember speaking to Colwill in the US in pre-season shortly after his new contract was announced. And he does carry himself like a future captain. I think he does have that personality. He's not there as a player yet. And I think we saw that as well. I think for the second goal, you just have to be stronger. You can't ask the referee to bail you out in a situation like that. And I know it went to a VAR check, but it's incredibly high risk defending to just throw yourself to the floor because Scott McTominay's put an arm on you. Because if you don't get the free kick, it's a goal. So he's still learning, and he's also playing in a less familiar position. But as a personality, I can see why Pochettino would have been attracted to giving him the armband. And I'm sure it was, you know, well, at least pre-match, a special night for Colwill. It's probably not one he'll remember with fondness now. But I just think Pochettino is looking at trying to develop new leaders in this squad. And at this point, I don't expect Silva to wear the armband at all this season.
Lucy pointing out that Chelsea actually tweeted the team sheet with Sterling as captain initially, but it was Colwill and then it was James for the second half. Luke, we're talking a lot about tired players here and players who are out injured. I'm just looking at the bench from the Man United game. You had Badiashile and Petrovic, but other than that, Breuer, James, Matson, Washington, Gilchrist, Matos, Castledine, these are all either Cobham graduates, as Liam says, or, I don't know, Cobham sophomores. But it doesn't feel like there's much chance of any of them getting any minutes. You know, like Alex Matos, from what I've seen of him this season, he looks like a fairly capable midfielder. It's easy to make comparisons with other clubs, but you look at Lewis Miley and Kobe Mino and you think, is this going to happen with Pochettino's Chelsea that somebody like a Matos or a Castledine would be trusted in a Premier League game? Because it's almost now or never in that regard, isn't it? Because of the amount of injuries that Chelsea have got at the moment, these guys aren't going to get a look in if and when other players come back to fitness. So is now the time to maybe have a look at somebody like a Castledine or even a Washington?
I think it's a very difficult game when you play with the futures of 17, 18-year-olds. I think in both the cases you mentioned, Matt Minu and Miley, I think they have been earmarked for the last few years as almost generational talents in midfield. And let's not forget that Lewis Miley at Newcastle has overtaken Lewis Hall, who is older than him and had more senior appearances coming into the season as a midfield option, which is Hall's kind of favoured position, as it were. And he's still been restricted to occasional substitute appearances at left back, with Miley, who I think is younger than him, getting starts, you know, at the Parc des Princes against Chelsea, against Manchester United. So I think it's lovely to say and have this idea that, oh yeah, we should, you know, play the youth, you know, something that's been a common phrase around Chelsea over the last decade or so. But, you know, we kind of saw it early in the season when Mason Burstow started for Chelsea. And I think he's a very promising player and he's, you know, doing okay on loan in the Championship. But, you know, that start that he got was certainly a step too far. And I think maybe Pochettino will have regretted that. And it's sometimes it's just not fair if those players are not physically or mentally ready for, you know, professional Premier League football, then it's just unfair on them to throw them in and essentially throw them to the wolves and open them up to criticism. And I think, you know, Pochettino is naming these young players on the bench. You know, obviously he believes in them, and you know, Chelsea have rewarded Leo Castledine with a new contract, so they believe in him as well. But ultimately, they're on the bench because there aren't other players, you know, senior players available to Pochettino, and that's the difficulty right now. The only one of those that you mentioned, Matt, looking ahead to the Everton game, is Armando Broia. I think I would really like to see him get a start. I know Chelsea and Pochettino are easing him back after a very serious injury, but Nicholas Jackson struggled again and stayed on while Broia was brought on to chase the game. But I think I'd like to see Broia get the start just to show what he can do, because he has proven to be a menace. You know, against Manchester City, he was very, very effective. And I think Everton have two very capable centre-backs in Branthwaite and Tarkowski, who've struck a pretty good partnership. But I think it sounds flippant to say, but I just like to see what Broia can offer that Jackson can't.
In terms of the injuries, Liam, we've got, what, Chilwell, Chalobah, Chukwuemeka, Fofana, Gusto, Madueke, Ogechukwu, Nkunku and Lavia. We think Nkunku and Lavia are the closest to returning. I guess we don't really know about Madueke and Ogechukwu, but Ogechukwu might be the most important to come back out of that group at the moment, because he's played a lot and he offers some cover in those midfield positions. So they'll be keen to have him involved if possible.
Yeah, and Pochettino suggested in his pre-match press conference that both of those injuries, Madueke and Ogechukwu, were minor, which suggests that maybe they were left out of the trip to Old Trafford as a precaution rather than as a precursor to a slightly more extended absence. So it would be certainly a positive if they can be involved for this game, because Pochettino is thin on the ground with players that he can trust at the moment. And as we said, he clearly doesn't trust any of the academy players to play real Premier League minutes right now. So the sooner they can get some of these injured first team bodies back, the better it will be. But again, I go back to what I said at the start, they won't fix all of this. All of the problems we saw at Old Trafford, that's too big for one or two players that are maybe short of match fitness to come back in and completely transform. The most they'll be able to do is slightly relieve the minutes load on the guys who've been starting regularly.
Well, it's going to be a battle at Goodison Park. It always is, but they've got this sense of injustice fueling them now. I saw my team get utterly deitched by them last week, so Chelsea are going to have to put in a far better performance than they did at Old Trafford. Whatever happens, we'll break it all down on Monday's pod. Next today, though, we'll bring some joy into your lives by talking about the Chelsea women's team.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Well, there is a potentially season-defining game for the women's team on their return to action this weekend as they head to the Emirates Stadium to take on Arsenal. We need an expert to tell us how it's going to go down. Jesse Parker Humphreys, your lucky so-and-so. You get to talk about the functional aspect of Chelsea Football Club. How are you feeling ahead of this game then? Hyped? I mean, it's going to be a big one, right? Sell out potentially at the Emirates?
Yeah, potential sellout, 55,000 tickets sold already, full away-in for the Chelsea fans as well, which will be exciting. But I'm feeling pretty nervous. It feels like it's one of those like real biggest game of the season moments. And Chelsea haven't always been great when they've gone to the Emirates, although neither are Arsenal really. So it'll be interesting to see how this one plays out.
So Arsenal have kind of recovered from this iffy start to the season. They had a big crowd, didn't they, against Liverpool, and that didn't go great for them. Have they kind of been revitalised by the Emma exit news, do you think?
I don't know if it's so much the Emma exit news, because I think the thing that's really shifted as a result of that is all of Manchester City, United and Arsenal going, well, we're going to win the league next year. And I've kind of sat here thinking, well, you know, I know Chelsea normally win the league, but it seems a bit ridiculous to hand it to us in December. I think for Arsenal, it's more been, they've had quite a Chelsea-esque start to the season, I think, where they've had a lot of new players come in. They have obviously got players coming back from injury, Beth Mead, Vivian Amidamar. They're coming back into the team. I think it's just taken them a little bit of a while to get going, but they are picking up definitely an attack. I will say, though, that I still think they're pretty spooky defensively. And obviously that's in relation to the longer term absentees they still have, like Leah Williamson, for example. So I definitely don't think they're the fully formed Arsenal yet, especially compared to where Chelsea are so far this season. But the one thing I'll say about Arsenal-Chelsea games is they find a way to exist out of the realm of all sort of logic and form, you know, a la Continental Cup final last year where Chelsea were flying and Arsenal were rubbish and then they win 3-1. So to a certain extent, which is silly to say, I guess, if I'm previewing a match, but yeah, it's a bit like just hold on to your hats and see what happens.
Yeah, Arsenal, what, 8 in a row wins in all comps, unbeaten in 9. But I feel like Chelsea have been getting steadily better as the season's gone. Obviously, some impressive victories in terms of the amount of goals scored, but the performances have been improving. Would you agree?
Yeah, definitely. And Jonas Eidevall has gone quite big in sort of the past couple of weeks leading up to this game, saying that this is the best Chelsea team he's seen since he's been in the WSL. And while I think that can feel like mind games, I think he's right. I definitely feel like this is a Chelsea team that feel a lot more settled than at the start of previous seasons. And I think the results have shown that. I think they're a very exciting team at the moment as well. You know, you sort of made reference to the goals scored and there's definitely a sense of, you know, we're going to allow ourselves to maybe be a bit more open at the back than we have been in past seasons, but we're just going to absolutely outscore sort of everyone. So it doesn't really have to matter. And I think, you know, there's been a real exciting jump forward for a lot of players in this side. Neve Charles is obviously someone who's got a lot of attention around that. But I think Eve Perisay and Johanna Rutten-Kanerud are obviously two players who were signed last season, but really feel like they've stepped up to being regular starters. And then when you add in the new signings, players like Shukunuska and Ashley Lawrence, who look incredibly settled in the team already. I think Chelsea feel like in a great position. But the asterisk on that is they haven't really played tough games in the WSL yet. The one you point to would be the Man City away game, which they only just managed to draw despite playing against 9 players. So I think this Arsenal game is going to be a real interesting litmus test as to how good Chelsea are actually.
And a test of squad depth as well, right? Which is something we've spoken about a lot this season. I'm guessing Sam Kerr will play despite not going on international duty, but Millie Bright won't. And what about the Canadians? Because they've had a long trip back, haven't they? Buchanan, Lawrence and Fleming. Might that mean that they'd be on the bench rather than starting?
Yeah, I think Kerr will probably start. That felt much more of a precautionary decision to pull her out the Australia squad when also Australia were looking to sort of test out younger players in those games against Canada anyway. I do think the Canadians probably won't start if Hayes can get away with it. She tends to prioritise players who've had more rest. And to that extent, some of the England camp was very good for Chelsea because Jess Carter ended up only playing 60 minutes and she's played every minute of Chelsea season so far. So good for her to get some kind of break over the international window. There'll, yeah, almost certainly be no Millie Bright. And that'll be interesting. I think Maren Mjelde will probably be preferred. She didn't play in Norway's second game in the international break either because she had too many yellow cards. So that was handy for us as well. But yeah, the kind of question marks are really sort of around players like Guru Reiten and Melanie Leupolz, who've been out of the squad in recent weeks. But as is sort of Hayes and Chelsea's want, we have no real idea on what's wrong, timelines, et cetera, et cetera. So whether we'll see any of those players, you know, before Christmas even is quite unclear.
I'm obliged to ask you something about Lauren James coming up against their old club, nonetheless, here. That goal she scored, one of the two she got for England in midweek, was obscene. Is she the best player in the league right now?
I think so, yeah. I feel like she has just taken such exciting steps forward this season. And actually, she's someone who I think's really benefited from Guru Wrighton's absence, which is kind of wild to say, given how crucial a player Guru is. But James has sort of been moved out onto the left wing as a result. And she just feels like she's thriving there. That's where Serena Wiegmann then started her in both England games, choosing to play Lauren Hemp as the 9 and dropping Alessia Russo to the bench, which I think is a marker just of how good James has been operating in that area. And obviously for England, being able to have that Charles James axis on the left-hand side as well. But I feel like what's really exciting is we always knew that Lauren James could sort of score spectacular goals. But I think what's been really amazing is the assists. She's picked out both for Chelsea and England some absolutely delightful balls for players to run onto. In the 3-2 comeback against the Netherlands, she got two of the assists in that game, both these sort of like crossfield balls for runners at the far post. And I think it's interesting because James is clearly so technically talented that I don't think, you know, the goal contributions thing had to matter. But for a while, it felt like that was the element of her game that was still missing. We know she's great on the ball. We know she can take on players. But can she really be that, you know, consistent, whether in terms of creating or scoring goal threat around the box? And this season, that's what we've seen. I think she's on sort of like 12 goal contributions in like her past 7 games for club and country, or just something absolutely bonkers. Like, it feels at the moment that she's just so confident and so ready to take games by the scruff of her neck. And I think the other thing that's really interesting is people in the past seem to have this idea that, and I think this was true, that James occasionally would go missing in the bigger games. That Continental Cup final against Arsenal was a great example of where she was basically marked out the game and Chelsea struggled to really know what to do without her available. I think the World Cup's really changed that for her. And I think now she seems to really be thriving off the big occasions. We've seen her at Stamford Bridge in particular, looked fantastic. I just think she actually really loves being, you know, in a place where there are lots of people watching her. And to that extent, playing at the Emirates in front of potentially 60,000 could be very exciting from a Chelsea perspective.
Finally, Jesse, we've got Champions League coming up Thursday next week, Hacking at home. Emma will have that in the back of her mind, obviously, but she doesn't need to kind of prioritise that over this game at the weekend, does she? Because having taken 4 points from the first two games, Chelsea are in a good position to qualify from the group anyway. So we kind of have this worry of balancing Champions League and WSL, which obviously nobody else in the WSL has to do this season. But it looks as though for the moment, that's not going to be a massive concern.
Yeah, and I think it's helpful that the first Hacking game is at home. This kind of strange sort of wrinkle about that, I guess, is Hacking are actually the team who are top of the group, who I think if you'd asked people before the Champions League begun, would have been sort of assumed to be the team who are at the bottom of the table, but they've beaten both Paris and Real Madrid already. I will say, having watched those games, I think Hacking were very open at the back and were just very sort of lucky on the chances they were able to capitalize against two teams who I don't think are great either. So I do think Chelsea can feel confident, but I actually think they will want to take these games seriously because they're on 4 points now. If they can be on 10 points at Christmas, Chelsea have like quite a tough January with sort of United coming to the Bridge and those games around there. And I think they would be happier to be on 10 points sort of at Christmas and maybe in January, which is the weird thing about the Champions League group stage this year, which I'm still struggling to get my head around. It goes on into January. Then they'll be able to sort of relax and maybe focus more on the WSL, knowing that potentially even being top of the group might be secured by that point.
Good stuff. Jesse, we're enjoying your work on The Athletic now. Just remind everybody how they can subscribe to your excellent newsletter as well, please.
Yes, as well as finding me on The Athletic, you can find me on flyinggeese.football, where I write about many different footballing things around the women's game twice a week.
Yeah, and the subject title usually makes me go as well. So that's always a plus. We appreciate your time as ever. Hopefully speak to you soon.
Thanks.
Many thanks to Jesse. After we spoke to Jesse, Chelsea confirmed that Anique Nouwen has sustained an ACL rupture while on duty with the Netherlands under-23s squad. So she's going to be out for a prolonged period. Get well soon, Anique. Elsewhere in Chelsea news, the under-18s kick off their FA Youth Cup campaign on Friday night when they head to the East Midlands to take on Leicester City. The under-21s don't play this weekend. Their next match is away to Luton in the Premier League Cup. That's on Tuesday night. All right, it's the moment you've all been waiting for. We're going to do a quiz. So much controversy around this last week. Luke even set up a couple of burner accounts on X, formerly known as Twitter, to have a pop at me and Dom specifically about the way the scoring went. So we'll try and keep it all legit.
I think I was sent a petition on change.org after last week's quiz.
I'm still waiting for your PGMOL style apology, Matt.
Yeah, where's the quiz mic'd up show? We can release that as a podcast extra or something.
Lucy is very much the Howard Webb, so you'll have to wait to hear from her, I'm afraid.
Lucy piping up with, well done, boys, good process.
Let's see how this week's goes, shall we? I haven't put a tiebreaker in. So there's something for Lucy to do while we go through it. Here's question number one for you, Liam. Whose final Chelsea goal came in the 2-2 draw with Everton at Stamford Bridge last season?
Oh, my God.
I will not be offering any clues this week.
Final Chelsea goal, 2-2 draw. I don't remember this game even slightly.
Yeah, I think I've done a pretty good job of sort of whitewashing most of last season's actual matches from my brain.
Yeah, I don't...
I think Luke knows this, not to put any pressure on you.
Kai Havertz?
Kai Havertz is absolutely right. Of course it was.
I thought you might have baited me with that one. I couldn't... I initially thought my strategy going into this quiz just to lift the lid was just to say Stephen Naismith as the answer to every question.
Apologies, by the way. Last week we did a quiz on Darren Barnard's birthday and didn't mention the great man. So that one is definitely on me. Luke, here's your first question. Who was the last player to join Chelsea from Everton? This is according to Transfermarkt.
Oh, well, I think there was one in the summer, but I don't know if it will be on Transfermarkt. Ishe Samuel Smith?
Yeah, I'll rephrase that. In the first team.
Okay. But I mean, I've got it right, have I not? That's right.
This is another immediate review, isn't it? This is just...
Let me throw over to Stockley Park, a.k.a. Lucy's flat. What do you think? Do we have to give Luke a point?
Well, have a go at the answer Matt wanted, and yeah, then we'll adjudicate.
No bonus points, though.
You could get a moral point and an actual point.
I think I'd get an actual point anyway. I think that should be clear. Is the answer you wanted, Matt? Ross Barkley?
Yes, it is. Thanks. Okay. That's great. So now we don't have to ever mention that unpleasantness again, and we can just go straight on to question two. But well done.
Great. So now I have to go through the rest of the quiz knowing I've morally lost.
That's really good knowledge though, Luke. Ishe Samuel Smith did indeed join from Everton this summer. Liam, here's your second question. Who joined Everton on loan from Chelsea for the 2018-19 season? Gone for the classic rub the forehead, then look out the window. Will the answer be out there?
It's not on that chimney that I'm looking at. I'm going to be really annoyed the moment you say this.
Come on.
No, I don't know.
Luke?
I believe it is... is it Kurt Happy Zuma?
It is Kurt Happy Zuma, the cat kicker himself. So it is 2-1 to Luke. Here's your second question. Who scored their first league goal for Chelsea in a 3-1 defeat at Goodison Park in 2019?
Of 2019. I mean, I know it was quite a long time ago, but that feels like an absolute age ago. 2019. So that's around the transfer ban time, I believe. It's in that vicinity. So I'm going to go with the only player that Chelsea signed around that time, which was Mateo Kovacic.
The boy is absolutely flying today. This is incredible.
So annoying. I actually remembered a detail from a past match, and then he gets it anyway.
Was it like a volley from outside the area or something?
Yeah.
Quite a good goal.
Eddie scored at Sevilla a couple of days before or something, or fairly soon before that, which was his first goal. That was his first league goal. Luke, you are doing extremely well. There's one question left each. This is on the women's team rather than Chelsea versus Everton. Liam, here's yours. Emma Hayes was an Arsenal Academy player until the age of 17 when an ankle injury ended her hopes of a playing career. How did she suffer said injury?
My knowledge of Emma Hayes' playing career is not. It's just not.
To be fair, this might be the hardest question of the season. So
yeah, I think that's harsh.
At least you've directed it at the worthiest quizzer on the pod, the one most able to handle difficult questions. I'm going to say, I don't know. I'm hoping it occurred in a game. I don't know. Treading on someone's foot.
Luke, can you steal it?
I don't know. Falling down the stairs?
It was skiing was the answer we were looking for. She hurt her ankle skiing. That's not funny in and of itself, but for some reason that answer has really amused me. It means, Luke, that you've won, despite not having had your final question, but we'll read it anyway. Which Chelsea women's player made her debut against Arsenal as a 16-year-old in the 2014 Champions League quarterfinal? Liam will know this.
I'm going to go with a 16-year-old. In the 2014. So how long ago was that? Nearly 10 years.
9 years, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like the age... I mean... Is that 25 now? Who's 20? I feel like the ages are wrong, but Sophie Ingle?
You want to take a point just to reduce the arrears a little bit, Liam?
I don't know why you're assuming I'm just going to tap this in.
I just feel like I feel like I've read an Athletic piece with this fact written in it.
Did it have my byline on it?
Possibly.
My guess would be Super Fran Kirby.
It's good, but it's not right. It was Jess Carter who was playing for Birmingham City.
Does make sense.
At the time. Luke, well done. You have picked up a booking for Descent for chatting back to the official, but you have won the quiz. How does it feel?
I mean, a booking for Descent, I'd fit right in with the current Chelsea squad.
You will be starting at Goodison Park on Sunday. The tiebreaker, by the way, was Sean Dyche's first ever Premier League match as a manager. It was a 3-1 defeat by Chelsea at Turf Moor. Lucy wanted you to guess the exact date.
What?
I don't know, 6th of August 2012?
Oh, you got the month right, Liam.
I'm not going to dignify this. I've already lost.
Scared.
I'm not letting Luke run up the score. He's already got a moral win and an actual win.
It was the 18th of August 2014. If you got that, listener, open the curtains and go outside because there's other stuff to do in life, including reading all the excellent work on The Athletic. Liam, tell us what you've got in the pipeline for Athletic subscribers, please.
Yeah, so there will be a piece on The Athletic on Friday about a documentary that is coming out. I believe it will be on Chelsea's official channels before too long, which is called Blue is the Colour. And it is the story of a young black Chelsea fan called Zymaka, who was commissioned essentially to make this film addressing the central question of how can you be black and be a Chelsea fan? And so the piece explores the fact that it's quite interesting that Chelsea would commission a fan to go off and do this, because as we know, Chelsea's relationship with racism historically and recently has been pretty complicated with the fan base and in terms of incidents that have happened on the pitch. So I spoke to Zymaka earlier this week. He's, to provide a bit of context, this is part of a thing called the Blue Creator Fund, which Chelsea have launched in partnership with Versus to empower creators from underrepresented backgrounds. And Zymaka's one of two. There's also a girl called Becky who's had a project where she's created signet rings for key champions in the Chelsea fan community. But I think it's probably Zymaka's film that will have the bigger resonance outside Chelsea purely because of the theme that it explores. And so that will be up on The Athletic on Friday.
Interesting. Looking forward to reading that. Luke, anything that's caught your eye on the site that we should know about?
Yeah. There were, including Chelsea's dismal performance at Man United, there were 6 Premier League games on Wednesday night, obviously, and Ollie Kay had the pleasure, some would say, of attempting to watch them all on Amazon Prime, who's the broadcaster here in the UK. And it's kind of a fun look of how do you keep up to date with 6 games at a time, a bit like you know, for fans of American football or just Americans, a bit like a mini kind of NFL red zone. And it's Ollie Kay, so it's obviously incredibly well written and quite funny. So yeah, nice read.
Excellent. Simon's also got his match piece up and something on how Chelsea allowed Tino Livramento to slip through the net. Remember, athletic.com/ChelseaPod, the best place to go to sign up if you aren't currently a subscriber, because it makes us look good, as it does if you give us a nice review and rating on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter, at SOCodmonPod2. We'll be back on Monday to break down the Everton game and plenty more besides. Join us for that if you can. Until then, thanks to Luke, to Liam, and to Lucy, and to you for joining in. We'll catch up with you again next week. Bye for now.
The Athletic.